This is a download from BFM 89.9, the business station.
Good morning. It's now 8:47 on Monday, the 1st of August. You're listening to The Morning Run with me, Melissa Idris, Julian Ng and Ibrahim Sani. Today is also the first day in office for Tan Sri Abdul Wahid Omar as the new chairman of PNB. He is replacing Tun Ahmad Sarji Abdul Hamid as chairman.
You know, initially, it was speculated that he would take on the executive chairman role, but it seems that, that notion is now clear now. He's just going there as a chairman.
So that means the chairman.
So that means PNB still might have to hire a CEO to take on that executive role.
I think that rendering of just a chairman to me is important because the chairperson usually is the head of the board and does not make any executive decision. But for somebody like Wahid, you know, you would want him to be at the forefront of things, to be at the core of things, to make decision, an executive decision, either as a CEO or an executive chairman. But it just feels like the chairmanship role may not be using Wahid to his full potential.
And remember, this is an organization where their asset under management is larger than that of Khazana. I mean, in fact, if I may compare the two, PNB has over 250 billion ringgit worth of AUM, and Khazana, supposedly one of the larger GLICs or government-linked investment companies in Malaysia, they have about 150 billion ringgit worth of AUM. So, does it mean that Wahid cannot wield the right necessary power and influence inside the organization because the chairman there does not mean that he has the executive role going forward?
Well, he certainly got the firepower to wield whatever influence, right? So, with 255 billion, as you mentioned, Ibrahim, and assets under management, that's a lot of money. But what is it that they want to be focusing on? So as he comes to office, what will be his way forward?
Also, I think the question is whether the Bumiputra policy has been achieved, because the main objective of PNB is to uplift the economic well-being of the Bumiputra.
There was a WhatsApp message that went around last night where Tan Sri Wahid penned his thoughts after he left the minister post about 8 weeks ago. And, you know, I want to quote verbatim here, right? Because he says that there are three mandates that are given to him. Number one, to improve the corporate performance of PNB and its group of companies. Number two, to enhance Bumiputra participation in the corporate sector. And Number three, to support the government in providing more affordable homes for Malaysians. So these things, right, they're meant to have that Bumiputra flavour, and it was in tandem with the creation of PNB outright. You're right, Julian. It was formed under the new economic policy. It was championed by Tun Ismail, the former Deputy PM, and it was formally inducted using the name Yayasan Pelaburan Bumiputra. So the question is, how can these three things that he has been given mandate to can actually sustain that kind of investment returns that PNB is doing? Remember, ASB is giving 8% returns to Bumiputra Trust.
How did
right?
they do that?
How do they do that? Is it sustainable? They've been giving Bumiputra Trust 8% all the while.
Okay, so the three mandates that you mentioned, Ibrahim, are they in fact in line with one another? I mean, you're talking about, fine, you want to enhance Bumiputra Trust's role in business and commerce. And then you've got affordable housing, addressing the issue of affordable housing. It doesn't jive to me. It feels like two separate issues to address.
You know, essentially, this country wants to look quite aggressively in the housing policy of the nation. In fact, when we had the minister of the second finance minister over, housing policy was his main thrust. It seems to be the flavor everyone wants to talk about right now. But it's not cheap building cheap houses. And there is a housing development company within PNB, which is Sime Darby. So does it mean that Sime Darby now makes affordable houses?
I don't think so. Sime Darby is a listed company that's going to be only interested in profit maximization, right? But could this be something of the so-called ESG sector, the fad that's going on now, ethical and social and governance and investment, of which also Sharia investment is a part of? I think in the short term, we can say that Sharia investments would give you pretty decent returns, but it requires some consideration about whether this is profit maximization or not, because would you want to take yourself, for example, out of the performance of the banks, which are very reflective and proxies of the economy? Could affordable housing be under the purview of a kind of ethical investing?
And remember, ethical investing sometimes may not bring about the profitability that we speak of, right?
Yeah, but so as a GLIC, as a government-linked investment vehicle, yes, company.
Worst off, because you think about it, PNB's investing companies includes Maybank, Takaful Ikhlas, MIDF, Etika Insurance. So does it mean that these institutions within the financial sector that is part of the investing companies of PNB, will they now be used to galvanize that whole notion of housing?
So is it a question of, instead of giving you 8% per annum or whatever that figure may be, I'm giving you a home? Is that, even if you don't profit maximize, is that a justifiable objective?
Mm. Wow.
And particularly when you have to look at the profitability of doing such businesses, no one housing development company can say that it was profitable making affordable homes.
Don't get me wrong. I think it's a very important issue to be looked at, right? It needs to be addressed. It's a national issue that needs to be addressed and resolved, essentially. But whether PNB is the right platform is another matter. I have full faith that Wahid will be able to achieve whatever mandate he's been entrusted to, given that he has a good track record in both corporate and government sector.
Yes, and like I said, you know, essentially Wahid is a personality that is quite well liked, if not loved, in both the corporate sector as well as the government sector. I'm pretty sure he has.
And it seems in radio as well.
Yeah. But essentially, this is a tipping balance game that, you know, not many people would envy, particularly when you have to balance commercial objectives with the social one.
Okay, good luck then for the first day in office. But let's take a look at some other news. Now, last week, we spoke about the financial troubles of Singapore oil and gas contractor Swiber, about how it's facing hundreds of millions of dollars in debt and also a decline in orders. We talked about the exposure that some Singapore banks have to Swiber's debts, namely DBS. But it also turns out that a Malaysian company also has some exposure to Swiber, Alam Maritime Resources. But they say that they will not face they will not feel the heat coming up from Swiber's financial troubles.
Which is surprising because they are doing the $76 million US dollar project offshore gas field in Sarawak. But the CEO, Dato' Azmi Ahmad, actually said that Swiber can be replaced by another partner should the need arises. This is with regards to the EPCI, the so-called
Engineering, Procurement, Construction, Installation, Commissioning.
Thank you.
Well
thank you very
done.
Much.
Yeah. Well done.
Two other JVs with minimal impact, but also talk that the Arlam Maritime may be interested in the stake of Swiber. Yeah. Why? Why go that direction?
You know, particularly when Dato' Azmi has mentioned in the same press conference that Alam Maritime isn't doing too well financially. This quarter, this year, they've registered 20 million ringgit losses. You know, they registered profitability numbers last year in the same period, right?
Their boats are only half filled.
Half filled.
I shouldn't call it boats.
Okay, vessels. Okay, Chuk. But then, you know, in this landscape where oil prices are low, maybe he's seeing that this is an opportunity. So Swiber, seeing that they have troubles, you know, knocking on their door, maybe he sees, okay, this could be an opportunity to get something on the cheap.
Well, if anything, they would have to take the role of a kind of white knight. And the thing with white knights is it's fine to take over a stake and have those kind of bragging rights, but you need to have the money to save the company involved, right? And Swiber right now, they have abandoned plans to liquidate. They're going for this judicial management route.
Yes.
And with this route, right, you have to think about the gearing ratio as well, because you know they're overly exposed. They owe a lot of money to a lot of banks. Whether or not they can cover this when they want to go for this process of liquidation, a lot of these creditors will just queue up and say, "You can't liquidate just yet. Pay my dues."
Okay, so that's not
what Swiber wants as well. I think they want to continue as a going concern. Right. But you're right. The queue for all these bonds and all these banking loans is long. Swiper is not the only one. I mean, you have about 1.2 over a billion bucks in bonds coming due over the next few months. Actually, half of that is coming due over the next few months. This is going to roil the oil and gas sector in Singapore. And I think this is one of the first few casualties that we're seeing in Singapore.
Well, it's not just oil and gas. Apparently, the manufacturing sector is also facing lots of troubles. Malaysia likely to experience job cuts in the wake of a move by two American investors who are pulling out a major portion of their operations here. Penang is set to be the hardest hit, as Seagate, it's a hard disk maker, they are pulling out, relocating a bulk of their, they're exiting Penang, if I'm not mistaken. Also, Western Digital, which makes computer data storage, they are relocating a bulk of their operations to Thailand.
So is this an end of the end of an era which was started in the 1970s to invite all these tech companies to Penang, earning them the Silicon Valley of Asia? And Penang has benefited a lot from the presence of, say, Intel, Seagate and so on. But now they're going away because the industry itself, the tech as well as the online industry is going through radical changes.
I don't know whether I agree with that statement. That label Silicon Valley of Asia.
Yeah.
Because you think about Silicon Valley, it's a hub for innovation and tech and, you know, all
it's
things digital, right? It's not about making chips or
manufacturing
hardware.
Sector,
well,
yeah.
it's about innovation, which requires both the academic support and the research support. It's about funding and it's about just people with ideas and putting them all of them together. Mm. But Penang is, I guess, benefiting from that small part of it, which puts us in the global supply chain and producing all these chips in the past and now storage devices as well. And the emergence of cloud, I guess, is really changing the storage device industry quite radically.
You know, essentially, we were once exporting electronic goods the highest in terms of all the classification, right? And I think with these kind of exodus by all these IT companies, does it mean that the export profile of the country will change as well? And if it does, what does it mean to all these other jobs?
Yeah.
Today it's 3,000 jobs, then tomorrow what else, right?
Yeah, so you're talking about Seagate's Penang facility said to have about 3,000 Malaysian staff. They might be putting up the Bayan Lepas facility for sale as well. WD Western Digital expected to lay off 400 Malaysian staff and 800 foreign workers from its Penang site as well.
Thank you for listening to this podcast. To find more great interviews, go to bfm.my or find us on iTunes. BFM 89.9, The Business Station.